Hello, I'm Lina Ahmoudou. Welcome to Health Chat. People around the world mark the World AIDS Day on Sunday, December 1st, under the theme, Take the Right's Path, My Health, My Right. The celebration this year called on global leaders and citizens to champion the right to health by addressing inequalities that hamper progress to ending AIDS. The UN's Children's Fund has raised the alarm over the high rate of new HIV infections among young women and girls, warning they lacked access to prevention and treatment. In a report released ahead of World AIDS Day on Saturday, UNICEF says that 96,000 girls and 41,000 boys aged 15 to 19 were newly infected with HIV in 2023 globally, meaning 7 out of 10 new adolescent infections were among girls. In sub-Saharan Africa, 9 out of 10 new HIV infections among 15 to 19-year-olds were among girls in the most recent period for which data is available. Around 1.3 million people contracted the disease in 2023, according to a report from UNAIDS. Now, the total control of the epidemic TCE project in Zambia is focusing its effort on achieving HIV/AIDS targets ahead of the UNAIDS deadline to end AIDS as a public health threat by 2030. Kathy Short reports from Pitoke, Zambia.
Lozi Zulu has been living with HIV/AIDS for 5 years. She's a beneficiary of a Humana People to People program, a project working with communities fighting against HIV/AIDS, malaria, and tuberculosis. Zulu got pregnant after testing positive for HIV, but her son is HIV negative. For that, she credits medical interventions that help mothers take life-saving antiretroviral drugs or ARVs to prevent mother-to-child HIV transmission.
I have been living like this for 3 years, almost 4 years. So we go together with my husband to collect our medications. We take PrEP and ARVs together. So I'm very happy we are still together.
Zulu's husband, Joseph Banda, is HIV negative. He takes pre-exposure prophylaxis, PrEP, a medication that reduces infection from HIV, the virus causing AIDS. Zulu and Banda are what is known as a discordant couple, where one partner is HIV negative while the other is HIV positive.
My wife takes antiretroviral drugs to protect her from transmitting the HIV virus. She has to continue taking this medication for life.
Margaret Zulu is a field officer at the Development Aid from People to People in Zambia, or DAP, helping clients around the community to ensure that they are consistent in taking their medicines. She says field officers and community health workers visit people living with HIV who fell out of treatment to re-engage them and help them form small HIV treatment adherence support groups known as TRIOs.
This program of TCE epidemic control has helped people to have knowledge about HIV, about prevention measures, what to do if we have tested negative, what step they can do, or how they can live positive life when we find the discordant couple.
Mwamba Chunda works as an HIV focal point person with the Ministry of Health at Petauke District Hospital, helping HIV-positive people adhere to their treatments.
We used to lose a lot of clients on treatment. You know, when you chase someone on treatment, within a short period of time, they are lost. But we're engaging the community.
The project involves traditional leaders like village headman Yoram Mwanza to raise awareness in communities about HIV/AIDS prevention and treatment programs run by DAP.
We started going door to door, telling those who didn't attend the meeting that DAP has got this very good program and we should benefit from it because what we are learning is prolonging our lives, a good life.
DAP Zambia is implementing the TCE project in Zambia. Elise Sorensen is its managing director.
We are still saying putting people first. And the slogan in the TCE program is that only the people themselves can eliminate themselves from the TB and HIV epidemics.
The UN's bottom-up approach, combined with high-quality health services in Zambia, aims to move toward the global goal of eliminating AIDS by 2030. Kathy Short, VOA Africa, Petauke, Zambia.
As many as 77% of adults living with HIV have access to antiretroviral therapy, but just 57% of children 14 and younger and 65% of teenagers aged 15 to 19 can obtain life-saving medicine. VOA's Esther Gitui-Yuat spoke to Dr. Samuel Kinwanjui, the Kenya Country Program Director for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, SOEPI.
And that depends on the different parts of the world, but here in Kenya and most parts of Sub-Saharan Africa, we are seeing the young people being at the highest risk, particularly girls between the ages of 15 years and 24 years. In Kenya, these account for, looking at 2023 statistics, these account for 59% of the new infections.
What do you think is driving that, doctor?
I think the young generation, popularly known here as the Gen Z, did not live through the age when HIV was really a fatal disease, which quickly killed people with the very severe clinical manifestation and complications. And therefore, they seem not to understand that HIV infection is truly a dangerous infection. Number two is because the issues of safe sex has been a big challenge in this area, with a shortage, with severe shortages of condom due to shortage of reduced funding, and also the high taxes that the government has imposed on these commodities. In addition to this, we are also seeing significant challenges with the disempowerment because of unemployment, and therefore there is a lot of dissolution among this age group.
Amid that crisis in Kenya and other parts of the world, there's still a lot of talk from the United Nations, the UNAIDS and the United Nations, aiming to eradicate HIV/AIDS by 2030. How realistic is that goal?
I think it is real in some countries, particularly if we can sustain the AIDS. Because you find that in sub-Saharan countries, most of the countries that are making real good progress, including Kenya, the 80%, almost 80% of the funding towards HIV pandemic response is mainly funded through donors. Big on this is PEPFAR, Global Fund, and other funding organizations that are non-governmental, including AIDS Healthcare Foundation. And with the significant withdrawal of this funding, there is a big threat that the gains that we have seen over the last 40 years, they could start reversing very quickly. Because HIV infection is like a wildfire. If you control 90% like we have in some countries, and you leave 10%, it only takes a wind and maybe a couple of days to get another wildfire running and causing untold damage and loss of life.
Doctor, very quickly, what do you tell someone who comes to your hospital and tells you they are HIV AIDS positive?
We advise them that this is, given the current medication and tools that we have, this is a lifelong condition, and they can live a full and productive life with it as long as they remain on treatment. And most of the women are living very positively with this one, but we're having challenges with men, mainly who do not adhere to treatment, and that's why they are accounting to nearly 60% of the mortality that we are seeing now.
That's Dr. Samuel Kinwanjui, the Kenya Country Program Director for the AIDS Healthcare Foundation, speaking to my colleague Esther Gitui-Yuwart from Nairobi, Kenya. Now, Dr. David Sando is the Managing Director for the Organization Management and Development for Health, MDH, in Dar es Salaam in Tanzania. He discusses the challenges and opportunities in the fight against HIV/AIDS on the continent.
The current actually HIV prevalence among adults in Tanzania is 4.4%, which means 4.4% of adults in Tanzania are living with HIV. That corresponds to around 1,500,000 adults. And what we're actually seeing in terms of trends, there are higher prevalence among women compared to men. So 5.6 of women are living with HIV/AIDS as compared to men, only 3%. There are many reasons actually that explains the variation we see in terms of HIV prevalence and incidence. Some of them are biological, because women biologically, they are more likely to acquire infection from a man than a man, from a woman. But again, also, there are a lot of intergenerational, sexual exposure among women, especially from older men who, tends to, be more at risk because of their lifestyle. But there are also many other economic issues that predispose, women to, higher risk sexual activities. So there are a number of reasons that explains the higher prevalence and the incidence among women. These are just some when you compare between the two gender. MDHC, as one of the large, PEPFAR-supported organization, we are working very close with the government of Tanzania, Ministry of Health, and also PRH to advance national response to, HIV epidemic, committed to ending HIV as epidemic by 2030. And by, we do this through really expanding access to HIV testing, which is important for identification. So we provide the HIV testing, to over millions of people in a year. And we've been able to identify on an annual basis over 10,000 people living with HIV/AIDS and linking them to care. We are also supporting HIV treatment to over 500,000 HIV positive individuals. We are providing voluntary medical care circumcisions to a number of people, men. We are also supporting expansion of PrEP, pre-exposure prophylaxis, which has been proven to reduce risk of HIV transmission among key and vulnerable populations. We call for collective action to sustain and accelerate HIV progress, emphasizing the importance of right-based approaches and community engagement. And together, we can work towards ending AIDS as a public health threat by 2030, leaving no one behind in our efforts to create an AIDS-free generation.
That was Dr. David Sando, Managing Director of the Organization Management and Development for Health, MDH, speaking to us from Dar es Salaam, Tanzania. You're listening to Health Chat on Voice of America. It's time for a short break. Don't go away. We'll be right back. Welcome back to Health Chat. We turn now to sickle cell anemia, a condition that affects about 300,000 newborns every year, according to the World Health Organization. Many of them die before their fifth birthday. Sickle cell disease is more common in certain ethnic groups, including people of African descent, as well as of Middle Eastern, Asian, Indian, and Mediterranean descent. In Uganda, about 25,000 children are born with sickle cell disease. Joining us via phone from Kampala, Uganda, is Daniel Roy Udor, Executive Director of the Sickle Cell Rescue Foundation in Uganda. Daniel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Lynn.
It's great to have you. Listen, you've been working in the field of sickle cell for a long time. Talk to us today about what the landscape is in Uganda regarding sickle cell disease and how far you've gone.
Thank you so much, Lynn, and our listeners. For starters, as an organization based here in Uganda, just like you have mentioned, that annually we give birth to about 25,000 babies who are having sickle cell disease in Uganda. And out of that, we lose close to 80% of these babies, they don't live past their fifth birthday. And this is quite alarming. And even the 20% which remain, or the 5,000 babies that remain, still struggle to have access to better quality care around the country. In Uganda, the northern part of the country has the highest prevalence of sickle cell, close to 23.8%, way much more higher than the national prevalence of 17%. And if you come to the eastern part of the country, it's at 17%. Come to central part of the country, it's at 10%. Then the western part is at 4.1%. Lots of different synergies are being built in order to make sure that, one, these prevalences are reduced. As an organization, in close collaboration with the Ministry of Health, we have embarked on newborn screening of babies, because we believe that once newborn screening is done, this will help us in early diagnosis and also proper care and management of sickle across the country. Currently, we have about 10 regional centers of excellence, whereby, for example, if there is any sickle cell patient in any nearby district, they go there to access a one-stop care and management of sickle cell. Uh-huh. We've also embarked on UK.
So Daniel, let me...
Cultural leaders also be told of what sickle cell is all about, creating awareness.
Creating awareness, indeed, and that's something that you're doing through your organization. So tell us about what patients are faced with. What do they tell you when you meet them, right? You talked about creating awareness. Where are the needs? Is it their daily lives in terms of the challenges they are facing? What do they tell you?
Number one is... or low access to hydroxyurea, the life-changing medication. Currently, we receive it as donation in this country, and they are way too expensive. For example, you might find that one single tablet or a capsule is close to $1. So somebody deep down in my village somewhere cannot easily access this. And this is still a challenge. We are trying to talk to government to try to make sure that taxes are not imposed on this medication, because it is a life changer. Somebody who is on hydroxyurea literally does not have quite a number of different crises that comes up. It also reduces on the frequency of blood transfusion on this person. So we need to have access.
Mm-hmm. I think we
we
have some a little bit of difficulties with your connection. Are you there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
Yes.
Great.
The other thing is stigma.
Yeah.
Amongst this church, they do face lots of stigma from the community. Some of them refer to sickle cell as ICRA. This is something that we are trying to demystify this misconception about.
Uh-huh. So what is your experience? You say that children, some of the children in your database, what you've seen is that some of the children do not get past the age of 5. So what will it take for more children to survive this disease?
I think... number one is taking all the necessary precautions. We have gotten to learn that for us, the first important thing is prevention. We need to move around and tell people that before you get married, before you think of giving birth to children, know your sickle cell status. Premarital testing for sickle cell for your genotype is very key. Now, those ones who are already having these genes in them, the most important thing is knowing the do's and the don'ts. For example, if it is a cold weather, you need to wear
Mm-hmm. Okay.
To number one, but two, also avoid things that cause stress. Stress factors are really not quite good. During the national exams, we always lose these sickle cell patients because, one, they are so much under tension, under pressure, they are not settled, and this triggers crises for them. So then the other thing is also adhering to the medication that they have been prescribed to. If you take your medication well, the folic acid and diet and nutrition is also quite key in managing sickle cell for our patients across the country. And having male involvement, we have noted with concern that most men, the moment they discover that, one, there is sickle cell now in their family, men run away and leave the ladies. So having male involvement is very key right now, so that we also tell them that, look here, this is not witchcraft. This is a genetic disorder that we need to face it, and we need to let you know the do's and the don'ts.
So, Daniel, before we let you go, what is your message, or what do you hope to see in your fight for more attention to this condition in your country?
I beg your pardon? Repeat that for me.
No, I said, before we let you go, what is your message? What do you hope to see?
What I hope to see, number one, is massive awareness of the entire population. People need to know their sickle cell status before they get married. Then also, I request that the government should create at least a budget that is dedicated towards the purchase of hydroxyurea so that our young patients can also live longer. We have a 62-year-old patient, and we have been benchmarking and learning from this person. So, and also probably come up with better policies towards make sure that people get tested before they can get married or think of bearing children.
That's an important point that you're making about the getting the test before marriage, because a lot of people do not think of it, you know, and it's such an important step in preventing more children to be born with the condition. And my final question to you is, if a couple gets tested and it turns out that their children or their child will most likely develop the condition, what do you advise them to do?
Fine. Number one, love is a very strong thing. And we weigh you in. We give you the merits and the demerits. If you went ahead and got married to each other that are probably having the sickle cell genes, you will give birth to a sickle cell patient. Managing a sickle cell patient alone is expensive, but weekly be running to the hospital, and if you don't have money, that means that you will not ably manage or care for the sickle cell patient. So prevention is better than cure. We weigh you in out, but we will not openly tell you that please don't go and get married, but we take it through. We counsel you.
Okay. All right. Daniel Roy Odor, thank you so much for joining us today. We appreciate your time.
Thank you so much, and bye-bye from Uganda.
Bye. That was Daniel Roy Odor. He's Executive Director of the Sickle Cell Rescue Foundation in Uganda. We turn now to cancer. Cancer patients and advocates are urging authorities in Zimbabwe to ensure cancer centers have life-saving equipment needed to properly treat patients. Some patients say public hospitals do not have working machines to provide radiotherapy. Columbus Mavunga has more from Harare.
Munyeza had cancer in 2017. Munyeza says Zimbabwe's public hospitals did not have the equipment to treat her, and care in a private hospital was too expensive. So she sought treatment in South Africa, where she was declared cancer-free.
Because if I didn't have money, I would be gone. I would be gone because the treatment is expensive. So I would say my survival is mostly on my positivity and also on the types of regimes that I received.
The Zimbabwe National Cancer Registry's latest report issued in October says of the more than 7,000 new cancer cases reported each year in 2018 and 2019, 1,000 patients died of the disease.
In terms of cancer deaths, the leading causes of mortality, according to the report, are cervix. So cervix was by far the leading cause of a cancer. This was followed by prostate, and then esophagus, then breast and liver.
The non-profit group, the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe, says most types of cancer are curable, but the report suggests patients are not getting treatment until the cancer has reached its final stages. Love Mo Makurirofa with the Cancer Association of Zimbabwe is calling on the government to do more to stem the rate of cancer deaths.
Also need a sustainable funding mechanism, a domestic funding mechanism that is very sustainable, which will make sure that cancer programs are implemented extensively in the same way HIV and AIDS activities are being implemented.
Munyeza says cancer treatment in private hospitals is more expensive than seeking it abroad. She says cancer patients end up going abroad for treatment if they do not have funds to seek medication in private hospitals. For those who cannot afford to seek treatment elsewhere, Munyeza says the outlook is grim.
Remember, in Zimbabwe, there are only two radiotherapy machines. And of the two radiotherapy machines, they are all down at the moment, one in Blue and one in Harare.
In a brief statement to VOA on Monday, the Zimbabwean Health Ministry said the radiotherapy centers in Zimbabwe Mututi Ncube, Zimbabwe's finance minister, last year introduced sugar tax to raise funds to improve services for cancer patients. So far, that revenue has not yet been distributed for cancer treatment services. Meanwhile, Munyeza says she plans to travel to India for more testing to ensure she remains cancer-free. Columbus Mavunga, VOA News, Harare, Zimbabwe.
Hello, this is Heather Maxwell, host of Music Time in Africa. Join me every Saturday and Sunday for an hour of awesome African music. Wake up, dance this music. Like to stay on top of new music trends, breakout artists, new releases? Maybe you just love the classic styles and artists of the past. Or simply the sound and feel of a good beat. Whatever your pleasure, you can get it every week right here on Music Time in Africa. So join me on your local FM station, Saturdays and Sundays at 1500 and 2000 UTC.
That is all for this edition of Health Chat. We thank our guest, Daniel Roy Odor, Executive Director of the Sickle Cell Rescue Foundation in Uganda. Thank you all for joining us, and special thanks to all our affiliate stations throughout Africa for carrying Health Chat. I'm your host, Lino Mudu, in Washington, with producer Mugbili Abaro and our technician, Idris Regis. Until next time, take care, stay safe, and strive to make every day a healthy day.